Welcome to the weekly broadcast of Let's Talk About It, produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5 radio. Let's Talk About It is directed by Mario Espinoza with the technical assistance of Carol Buckley. This program brings weekly community mental health issues to your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Service, Leticia Plancarte Garcia, Director. And now let's join our co-hosts, Patricia Arevalo Caro and Alfonso Ruiz, for today's program.
Hello, Imperial Valley. Welcome to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio show brought to you as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health. My name is Patricia Arevalo Caro, and I am your co-host for today's show. If you would like to hear any of our shows in Spanish, please tune in on Wednesday mornings at 8 a.m. on Radio Bilingüe 88.7 to listen to our sister show, Expresate. If you'd like to revisit this show or any of our other shows or share a podcast, we'd love for you to do so. Just visit kxoradio.com and click on the Let's Talk About It and Expresate links on the right side of the page to find a show that interests you. Our radio show calendars, along with information about our various programs and services, are available on our county website, which is bhs.imperialcounty.org. If you have any questions, any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at wellnessradio@co.imperial.ca.us. We also offer free community service training courses, which are open to the public, and we're always happy to welcome new participants. You can call us at 442-265-7442 to find out about our upcoming classes. If you want to stay connected with Imperial County Behavioral Health, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram or listen to our podcasts on Spotify. You give us a like, a care, a follow, just to stay up to date with our wellness resources and any of our upcoming events. With that said, let me introduce my co-host, Berenice Flint, who will introduce our guest for today's show.
Well, hello, Patricia. Hello to our wonderful listeners. It is so nice to be here today, and we have a wonderful topic, a topic that we believe is very important and not very much talked about. And so we have an amazing guest that is going to talk to us and give us more information about this topic. And I would like to welcome Dr. Ravada, who is a clinical psychologist with the Mental Health Triage Unit. Welcome, doctor.
Thank you, Bernice. And hi, Patricia. Thank you both for this opportunity. And
wonderful.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Yeah. It's so nice to have you, doctor. Thank you for the time. I know you're very busy, and we appreciate you being here and sharing a lot of important information for our community. But before we get to our topic of the day, I would like for you to take a couple minutes and talk to us about who you are, give us some background information, something that you would like for our listeners to know about you.
Again, thank you all for your opportunity and listening today. My name is Sudhakar Ravada. I was born in India, and I came to the United States about 30 years ago to study. And my background was originally in management. And for a long time, I built and ran business organizations, even on global scale. But I always found meaning more in actually reaching out and helping others. I think most of us do that, like participating in church or some activity on the other. And my outlet was to help students who are especially finding difficulty in passing high school. So I did that community work by working with our students across multiple school districts for almost like 8-10 years. And the more I worked on it, I found more meaning in effectively helping people. And later on, I started helping people like who are having their problems with their credit, this and that. So having done this for 15 years, I realized like this is a path where I would like to spend more of my rest of my career. So I simplified along the way, and ever since I started focusing on psychology. And now I actually practice psychology mainly in three areas, which is clinical psychology here at Behavioral Health. I also practice in educational psychology and organizational psychology.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, thank you. Like Berenice said, thank you for spending some time with us. And, you know, like she mentioned, our topic is men's mental health and men, you know, June is the month of men's mental health. And so we'd like to know, what is men's mental health? It's a big, broad topic, and we're going to break it down a little bit more.
It is. Whenever I look at it, I feel like life spares no one. It doesn't matter whether we are man, woman, irrespective of gender, irrespective of race, culture. We all share challenges in life. And the question then boils down to, like, how are we dealing with those challenges in the process? Are we doing in a healthy way and an unhealthy way? And when it comes to men, the good news is that at least a good proportion of my clients are men. So that gives me hope that, you know, people are increasingly more aware. They know how to help themselves. They know how to help their kids. But that said, traditionally speaking, men have always played the role of problem solvers. This is even women do too. But point is, traditionally, men play the role of problem solvers. And there is that stereotyped thinking still, like, you know, hey, as part of this problem solving, if you come across anything that is not resonating well with you, emotionally impacting you, psychologically impairing you, the go-to response is tough it up. That is what it's being, that stereotypical men point of view, right? Hey, you are not a man if you don't really stick to that thinking. So as a result, what many people do is, like, they tough it up. And sometimes they try to cope by drinking or overworking or doing something or the other to help them get past. And if you ask them, they would just say, that's just the way of life. What's the big deal? But what they do not recognize is that along the way, the mind and the body is also taking a beating from all these habits. And there is a breaking point that happens. And when that breaking point happens, that is when it really becomes a big challenging issue. The very easy way to relate to this is, imagine that I, you know, all of us have hands and legs. Imagine I have my leg is fractured a little bit, right? It's just aching a little bit. There's a cut on it. I will tough it up. And I keep walking and doing things. And then gradually, let's say I'm putting more and more pressure with that broken leg. Eventually, it leads to a much disastrous problem. Then I had to run to the emergency. That's the same phenomena, same behavior I see with respect to mental health as well. So if there is one takeaway I would tell people is that don't associate strength with silence. Being strong doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be silent about these problems. It's okay to talk about these things and get the help, because a lot of services are available, especially in our community, and they're just a phone call away.
That's really good. And you know, we want to mention at the top of the show, and then we'll mention it at the end of the show, our contact information. So in case somebody is listening, or even if somebody has shared this podcast with them, we want to give you our two contact numbers, which is 1-800-817-5292. That's a 24-hour line. And then our 8-to-5 kind of line is 442-265-1525. And there you will be greeted by one of our access, and both lines, our access and benefits workers, and they will see what your needs are, what your immediate needs are, and transfer you to the appropriate person to get the help that you need and start your journey, your behavioral health journey. So we want to, and we'll mention those numbers at the end of the show too, in case you want to jot them down. You know, you mentioned a few things there of people getting help and you know, wanting to get help. And I know that there's some barriers, maybe cultural barriers, maybe stigmatizing barriers. So what are some of the things that you see that are most common that men, and you know, we're talking about men this month, you know, where our focus is on men, but it can be anybody, that of them not wanting to seek help. I mean, why do people say, you know, I can handle it, or I can deal with it, or I don't need help, or what's the barrier? What are some of the chief barriers?
It's such an important question. Thanks for asking that. The reason I say it is, when it comes to mental health, it always, I mean, there are exceptions, but generally it starts as like a faint noise, like our faint inner voice kind of a thing. And most of the time, the impact is not very significant on when it starts, right? So as a result, we start getting used to it. We find that there is a way to live with it. It's not really a big problem. And then gradually it amplifies. And then it comes to a breaking point. So the whole point is that we are not tuned to paying attention to those faint signals when it happens, right? Like, for example, just to give you a very specific example, let's say I'm experiencing a lot of stress and I'm feeling overwhelmed, and to the point where, let's say I have to do 10 different things every morning, make my coffee, pick up simple things, like, you know, get my lunch, et cetera, et cetera. But I start noticing that, you know, every morning I'm missing something or the other. Sometimes I miss my keys. Sometimes I miss things. But I can easily ignore it to say, oh, it's just I got busy. Something is happening. But I don't pay attention to the simple point that, oh, why am I missing the simplest things? That is what I mean by a faint signal. It starts with small things. And we all have the natural ability within us to just cope with it. But gradually, that is just the starting point left unaddressed. And if it becomes a chronic issue, that is when it becomes a bigger problem. That's definitely one, by not paying attention. And there's a couple of other things, which is we wrongly equate mental health to mental illness or mental disorders. That is such a common thing that happens again and again. When I tell people, like, hey, do you go to have physical fitness? And they say, yeah, of course, I go to the gym, I run, I walk, do something or the other. And how is that different from a problem like a cancer or something else, a diabetes or cholesterol? They say, come on, don't equate these two. These are two different things. But then when you talk about mental health, they somehow combine these two things as they see it as one and the same. And that is a very wrong thing to do. Mental health in general is a healthy state, you know, to be able to experience our emotions as a human being, ability to coexist with other people in our family and relationships, our workplace and all, ability to overall have a good quality, healthy life within the means we have and go about the journey of life. It's just about mental fitness. It's nothing to do with mental disorders or mental illnesses. That is what we address as doctors within the hospitals and clinics. So what I urge people is that please don't mix these two things. So a sadness, for example, is not depression. But when people just talk to each other on social media or even in a home environment, they just mix these two words. Oh, this person is experiencing anxiety. This person is experiencing depression. Unfortunately, these words have become common in everyday vocabulary. But the answer is please realize the distinction. So what I mean is that it's okay to start exploring on mental health, improve your mental fitness, and also recognize that there are cases where you have mental health problems, and if it is the latter, proactively reach out for help. Don't delay. And the third and last thing I want to highlight is the stigma itself. And it is appropriate. Sometimes I see parents telling me that, hey, I don't want medication for my kid. Sometimes men themselves say, I'm going to take this medication. I feel like I really need it. I'm unable to bear the symptoms. But would I be stuck with this medication forever? And sometimes I see people who are diagnosed with problems. They're already given medication. They went through the whole system, but they are treatment non-compliant. And I ask, like, why are you not taking your own medication? And this person would be 60 years old, right? So old enough in life to know good and bad. He would say, oh, I don't know. My family says, like, don't use this medication because it's going to make you this and that. What I tell people is that, you know, first of all, I want to respect stigma. Stigma is like a strong belief. Most of the times we heard from somebody we care or we know or somebody we respect, or we ourselves had a bad experience. I don't want to discard stigma, right? But on the other hand, what I want to highlight is that all fields of medicine, and especially even mental health that I'm closely associated with, is going through a rapid, dramatic change. We have no more solutions now than what we had 20, 30 years ago. More understanding now and more personalization for different culture, age groups and all. As a result, my takeaway here is that take the stigma or strong beliefs if you have, forget the word stigma, even if it's a strong belief you have, don't let that belief stop you from pursuing opportunities, but rather let that belief drive questions to ask. Ask questions to your doctor to say, hey, my experience is we're going to be stuck with this medication forever. Do you see it the same way? What tells you that it doesn't work? Or why do you think this therapy is really going to work for me? How is it going to help me solve the problem? Or what will it solve? What will it not solve? My bottom line is take those strong beliefs, take stigma or any such things, channel it instead of avoiding a service, channel it to asking questions. And that applies not only in this context, but in any context, but mental health especially. Please ask questions, educate yourself. And I may go even on a limb here and to say, please be greedy for your own health, right? Because there's no point in being stuck with a problem and having a bad day despite all the good things happening around you.
Right. Just how they explain it in different trainings, such as the assist, applied suicide intervention skills training, or the youth mental health first aid training that I'm familiar with and facilitate, is one of the recommendations that they make is take care of yourself first, right? We need to take care of ourselves first before we can take care of somebody else or for our family members. In the case of men, right, the importance of taking care of themselves and acknowledging and see their and identify their symptoms or identify what they're going through and take, like you mentioned, right, be selfish about it. Take care of yourself. See a doctor if you're noticing, hey, I'm feeling more nervous than I usually do or usually am, or I'm feeling sad most days than others, and this is something new, this is something that I hadn't experienced before. And rather than just putting it in the back burner and, as you mentioned, doctor, just dive into work or not focusing on it, it's best to really reach out to someone and try to figure out where this is coming from. And one of the things that I if you don't mind sharing with us, you know, how do men normalize these conversations about mental health or about what they're going through? You know, where can they start?
I'm smiling because this is an everyday situation. It's a life experience for me. I see my own parents, uncles, aunts, friends, others. There's like an entire book of things people do, especially men do. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put any ideas in people's mind. Please just take it as a caution. I'm not recommending you to do this. But if you are doing this, then, you know, watch out that, hey, that is something, it's a red flag. And as you rightly just said, Bernice, just at least get an opinion and a check. So getting to the question that you asked, I've seen an entire buffet of things. And a couple of things that stand out are, one is frequently talking. Some people are used to talking to their other close friends or somebody. They vent their problems again and again. Initially, it gives them an emotional relief talking to some close buddy or somebody. But later on, after a while, they don't realize that became a go-to mechanism. The other person starts resenting, oh man, yet again, this person is calling. Mm-hmm. After third sentence, he is going to go back into the same old problems. That kind of thing, unnecessarily, it ruins the relationship. And second is, you don't have control on the message once you share somebody. So then you are bearing an unwanted cost. And another thing that stands out is people resort to drinking. And mm-hmm. if they're into substances, they start consuming substances. And there are sometimes people would say, oh, I'm feeling this chronic symptoms of sadness and all that, but my buddy told me to just try this substance. And you know what? That really helped. Yeah, it helps in that moment, except that after 2 or 3 days or some time, you have to increase the dosage, and it has after withdrawal symptoms. The point I want to emphasize, the word is cost. In every example I'm giving, there's a relationship cost, there's a health cost. All of this is directly transferable into a dollar figure. Because to overcome and get rid of that substance, again, you're going to hospitals, you're paying all the medical fees and everything. You're paying a cost. You have to recognize mm-hmm. that, you know, you're paying money directly, time, effort. Some cases people get irritated. If they are the person with power, it is possible in most families, then they don't have self-checks and balances. As a result, they can easily become very impulsive to their behaviors. They can easily rant at their kids or their spouse and others or other family members. They can easily go out of hand. So in the process, they're creating a toxic environment in their own home system. And that is actually unhealthy in many ways, because now not only you're impacting yourself, but you're impacting others. Mm-hmm. Now there are others who would resort to the fourth strategy, which they feel is healthy, but it's actually unhealthy, which is they overwork themselves. They keep themselves so busy and say, I don't have time to deal with this anymore. And that's how they keep themselves busy. But what they don't recognize is that stress is really a silent killer. And you're just accumulating and accumulating and accumulating, and a point comes that it's going to break down. So these are at least three, four things that stand out. There are people who it goes to the maximum extent that they abandon completely, or they become very destructive and defiant in relationships. Good people, by the way, you know, good people, they have very affectionate people. Their family says that we really love the person, but then they say, I don't know what happened. Why did he consume so much of the substance, or why was he really going out of hand and to the point where we had to call a police officer or somebody or the other to help? All these are basically wrong ways of coping, mm-hmm. which is just delaying the problem. Think of it as a financial debt, right? You borrow it, you will be paying the interest and dividends along the way to the damn thing.
Right. It's like a snowball effect, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, something small can turn into something bigger and greater just because they're putting a Band-Aid, really is what they're doing, right? They're just fixing it for now. But yeah. They're not really addressing the root issue.
And just to add a point there is that, to your point too, is that traditionally this has been the way of life for many men. So we grew up watching mm-hmm. our dads do it, uncles do it, and others do it. So as a result, it's a normalized behavior.
Right.
So people would say, what's so different? I mean, my dad did it, his dad did it, et cetera, et cetera. But the only point is, their our foreparents are a product of their time. When compared to that, now we have better options, better solutions, better awareness. So we have a better chance of living a better quality of life, which our parents or foreparents didn't have. So there's no reason why we have to live or cope the same way.
Excellent
very
point.
True. Very true. Yeah, times have changed, and so our attitudes and our ways of doing things and the way of thinking sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. Needs to also change. And, right. You know, you mentioned something, stress. I mean, a lot of times we don't realize that we're under stress because we just kind of normalize it and just keep going because that's the way we function and that's the way we do things and we have to do that way. And we don't take the time to decompress. And, you know, there's a lot of tips and tricks and things that we can do to kind of help relieve and relax ourselves. Like, even if we're sitting at our desk or, you know, to kind of help relieve stress and stuff like that. And maybe in the last 3 minutes that we have left, you could just mention a couple of things that, you know, someone can do if they're feeling a little bit stressed, you know, like maybe a little bit of deep breathing or a little bit of some kind of relaxation or something that somebody can do just to take a breather, just to take a minute yeah. to kind of decompress.
Yeah. So two aspects to that, right? So one is having a purpose in life and being more self-aware on how you want to spend time, what you want to spend time is always a good thing. What I mean is that rather than just get drifted into some activity or the other, and then you just say, oh, I didn't have time for what I really need to work on. Most of the times, let me give you a specific example. If my goal is to make so much money by the end of the year, I'm just talking to men, so usually it's an example. Then the question then to ask is that in a given day, in a given week, how much of my time is directly going towards that objective? And if I just say that I do have these dreams and thoughts, but at the same time, I'm not really working anything and not able to give some amount of time measurably and all that, that's what I mean by lack of alignment with purpose, because then you're always stuck with the goals and that creates stress and all those things. So in general, at any time, having a purpose-driven life helps. And I meant by purpose not only by the money example I gave, but about everything. Like, hey, I want my kids to do something. This is how I want to spend time with my spouse. And this is how I would like my weekly activities or something. I should be able to take time to play a basketball hoop or something, or would like to go to the gym, this thing. So have some things that you really care for a quality life that you really desire and be able to take time. That's always a preventive point of view. General lifestyle point of view, that always helps. Then situationally challenges happen. Sometimes, you know, crap does happen and we ruminate and worry about it a lot and we start feeling sad and everything. What we have to understand is the powerful nature of our mind is that the more we worry or do something, it's like a sinking pit. It will grab you even further and you can get easily locked in that thought for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So the one way to get out of it in that moment is try to distract yourself in a healthy way. For example, hey, around the room, let me count five different things in red color. Let me challenge myself by counting backwards from 100 to, 150 if you want, etc. Or let me pick up a phone and call one of my friends and don't talk about your problem, but rather let me talk about something I was trying to catch up with him anyway. Etc. Right? So try to distract the mind, give it something else. The moment you give something else, immediately the mind distracts and you're out of the problem. Right? So these are two mechanisms. If you do the general healthy lifestyle, the chances of getting into the second kind of problems will be less. But still, if you're getting into the problem, then try to cope yourself by distracting, breathing, doing some physical activities. All that will help.
Those are really good tips. So we've come to the end of our first segment. We are speaking with Dr. Rovada, a clinical psychologist of the Mental Health Triage Unit. My co-host and Dr. Rovada will be back in just a minute.
Let's talk about it. Bringing community mental health issues to your radio. Listen each Sunday morning to KXO AM 1230 at 7 a.m. and now on Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Or log on to KXORadio.com for a 5-minute podcast highlight of the show or the show in its entirety. This program is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5. Let's Talk About It is presented as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
If you're just tuning in, welcome. And if you've been with us all along, thank you for coming back after the break. And we are here with Dr. Rovada, our clinical psychologist with the Mental Health Triage Unit. And we are going to get right back to it on the topic of men's mental health. You might know, or you might not know, month of June is Men's Mental Health Month. And so we are taking this opportunity to continue our conversation about men's mental health. And again, thank you, Dr. Rovada, for being here with us and for the incredible knowledge that you have provided us thus far. And I wanted to share with you, Doctor, I recently was watching the NBA semifinals with my son, and the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City teams were playing. While watching it, I asked my son, I said, so which team are you going for? And he said, I'm going for the Spurs because I really like Wemby, who's a center player. He's a French professional basketball player, very, very successful. And he's like, I'm going for that team because I like Wemby, because I like what he stands for. And I said, what does he stand for? And he says, he's very vocal and he talks a lot about how important it is to show your emotions. And I really like that. I like that. He does cry. He cries when he wins. He cries when he loses. He's not afraid to show his feelings. And I really like that, he stands for that. And so I found that to be very interesting. And I really liked the fact that there are professionals, there are role models, men that are very successful that are starting to talk about the importance of expressing their feelings and be open about it. And so recently I dug up a little bit more about this. His name is Victor Wembanyama, goes by Wemby. And what he said, because he was criticized, right? We're in the game of sports, and so it's not very common. And what he said was that it is very it's very important to be vocal. There's a lot of expressing how one feels. It's a lot of times fear of being judged, and there's social codes that can cause men to hide their vulnerability. So he refuses to carry the burden of having to hide his emotions. And so, talking about mental health and supporting our men in showing their emotions and expressing how they're feeling, a support system, how important is that?
Lord, but first things first, how old is your son?
21.
Well, quite perceptive of the young man to understand or even recognize the importance of it. And spot on. The reason is that for decades, or even for God knows for how long, that is a significant gap in we as men. We never taught exactly on how to process emotion, for the God's sake, right? So point is that if you grew up with, if child grows up with seeing other people getting all physical, badgering the walls, this and that, going baseball bats and et cetera, that's exactly like, oh, that is how you express emotion when you're angry at something. Movies also reinforce the same thing. So, if I'm angry, that's what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And But the problem is that that is not the right response for anger, because that distracts, and there's a cost, as I keep highlighting in the whole earlier too. There's a dollar figure to these things. There's a life things, you know, that you're paying a significant cost. And sometimes you should ask, is your anger really worth it? Mm-hmm. Does the situation even justify that thing? Before going from 0 to 100 right away, maybe there are progressive stages on how to just express your anger, right? Maybe starting with just saying that I don't like it, I don't appreciate it or something, you know. There is some phased manner to go about. And unfortunately, we are not taught. Some of us, as we get older, pay some dues in life. We start realizing that, hey, our habits on how we grew up are not right. Those are not healthy anyway. So we start to change. But if there is one thing, as you rightly said, there's one thing, even in our school system, I would strongly encourage to please teach the kids on how to deal with their emotions, how to recognize what emotion you're experiencing, not only in schools, at home, if you can teach your kids, how to, first of all, recognize what emotion you're experiencing. Second, how to healthily, meaningfully express it to the other people. And third, and most important thing is how to process it. In the absence of it is when I come across kids in high schools these days. Sometimes they'll say, the person is suicidal, and I will check on it, that the person would have sent a text message to somebody else to say, like, you know, I don't feel like what's going on. I want to kill myself. I said, do you really mean killing yourself? Why are you trying to throw your life away just because the other person doesn't want to do friendship? Then the person says, no, I'm not trying to kill myself. My friends have done that. I've seen that. That's what you do. And I texted it. And then I have nothing against celebrities. I respect any person successful and others. But point is, unfortunately, a lot of this input comes from media. And we hear about stories of some great rapper, unfortunately, having some bad time, or some great singer, etc. So that becomes a role model for expressing emotions. So many a times I see men or young men, even older boys, ruining their relationships unnecessarily just because they cannot effectively coexist with others for emotional reasons. So that is definitely a developmental area for all of us in that category.
Absolutely. And I think culturally, at least, right, coming from a Mexican household, having family, extended family, we would hear a lot of, you know, boys don't cry, or, you know, when a child would cry, be like, stop, you boys don't cry. But then, you know, there's that, right, that you suppress that emotion, and then you don't teach the child what to do with that emotion. So you bring up a wonderful point of the importance of teaching children, teaching young boys, you know, what to do with how they're feeling and how to express it and how to communicate it effectively and appropriately. And I think there's that huge, the huge issue that as they become young men, young adults, they don't know how to express how they're feeling.
And if I may add, just a point here is that there is multiple ways to express the same emotion. So just, if they feel like, if you, a person feels uncomfortable from crying, for whatever reason, right, they don't think it's appropriate, there are other healthy ways to express the same emotion. They don't need to bottle it up. They don't need to do all the other things that we discussed early on. So all I'm saying is, like, find your style that works for you, that makes you the person who you are, right? And that makes you even have more fun with life, because now, rather than avoiding those situations, now you can deal with the situations in a healthy, effective manner, and people will also appreciate, like, wow, this person is very mature for his age, or even older age, etc. A lot of you become the effective role model that people look up to.
Right. Excellent, doctor. And you mentioned in the earlier segment that, you know, our parents, our grandparents, our elders, they are a product of their time, right? And so pushing through and not paying attention to their emotions and their mental health, particularly in men, you know, what was the way of how they would deal with their mental health? And but I believe that now we as a society and with technology, we have information and we have resources at our fingertips. And so with that, if we have a man in our lives, whether it's a friend, whether it's a relative, a cousin, a brother, a father, you know, what can we do as their loved one? How do we, how can we help if we start noticing, you know, signs of mental, mental health issues, of sadness, of nervousness, of, you know, I'm noticing that he's not sleeping. I see those dark circles under his eyes. I see a change. I see more irritability. You know, how can we help?
Yeah, great question. And, believe me or not, the answer is always right with us. It has always been in front, in our front, but we don't recognize it, which is just one, be empathetic, not judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
And second, start a conversation. And that conversation could be at a dinner table for some people, maybe a moment at when going to a game for somebody else. Every family has that patterns of communication that works for them. Please don't approach it from a threatening manner, but approach it from an understanding, because even before you give in to your anger and threaten, first you need to understand what's going on. So start with the conversation, be very empathetic to understand what they're going through, why they're going through, and be respectful that they may not be willing to share everything with you. But right. Even though you get faint signals, you can start adding up. If the person says, oh, well, I've been six months, whatever. You know that it is long enough, right? Now, the third part is, this is very important. Recognize if you are the right person to address it, or is it better to engage somebody else or a professional? Because don't try to address all problems. We're not equipped to address all the problems. I'm just like, if I'm an electrician, I'm good at solving those problems. If you put me to plumbing, I may have an idea, but I may screw up something. In this right. case, we don't want to damage a young person or any other person. It could be an older person too. So if that person always reciprocates to somebody else who you trust, then just tell that other person, hey, this is what I'm noticing. I had a brief conversation. Would you mind discussing a little further just to see what happens? Maybe you can uncover more. So that is one way. So you always have to see if you are the right person to address it. And the third is that, when you see that it has accumulated to a point, it is worth, you're not getting the clarity, it's easy to just talk to one of the professionals. Even a half an hour of your time is enough, rather than living with the problem for 3 months or 6 months or it becoming worse. So ask for help, get help, talk to somebody. The basics are always, as you rightly said, recognizing that there is a gap, being empathetic and trying to understand what is going on. And three, deciding whom you should engage so that you can get the best possible help for whoever you care.
That's super important, because we want to get people help, one, in a timely fashion. We want to, you know, if they're at the point where they want help, we need to be able to give it to them right then and there. And we need to be able to prevent anything going any further than where it is right now. And those are all really super good ideas or things that, you know, we can do. And one of the things that behavioral health offers, and Dr. Rivada, you're more versed on it than I am, is Casa Serena, where somebody can walk in and get help. They're open. Well, I'll let you explain a little bit about Casa Serena in the last couple of minutes that we have, and we can tell people about it.
I mean, I'm not beating my own drum here, but the point here is that we have to recognize that we are a rural county relative to other big counties in California, but for the county of our size, it is amazing to see how many services are provided, public services, even in mental health. It's there in education and other things. And people, you know, these are our own county services provided to us, but they're not aware of those things. So please take a moment to learn all of that. And one such amazing service to me is that two things, the Casa Serena and the Crisis Center. Normally, whenever you call any doctor's office, typically many times people say, oh, I want a therapist, but you know, I can't get anybody to talk to for another 3 months, 6 months. It's too busy. Nobody has time. But what people don't realize is this is a walk-in clinic. You can come in anytime. Nobody's stopping. There's no need for appointments. You get seen within the hour you come in. And I mean, a lot of qualified people are there on the standby. Not that they're not busy. They're super busy, but they will take their time to make sure that you're immediately attended, your address, your concern is addressed, and they will show you what the effective next steps are. So just be aware of that Casa Serena services is available, if I'm not wrong, morning 7 a.m. to night 10 p.m. I mean, literally night 10 p.m. And I was working earlier. I used to see clients even at like 8 or 9 in the night. So, you know, you can easily fit into your schedule. The other thing, what many people do not know, is that we have a crisis center. We are the only crisis center for the entire county. And what is more important is that if you are having a crisis because of mental health challenges and all that, this is available 24/7. And somebody would say, well, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Who's going to come? Nobody's there to give me a ride. You don't need to do anything. Just call the number. They will, you can even come to your location, pick you up, make sure you're in a safe space. You're getting the help you need. I mean, this just literally is a phone call away. And that's such an important thing, because if as a parents or kids or whoever you are, even as a single person and all, if you're having a very, very bad mental state for one reason or the other, it could be momentary, it could be chronic. Just realize that the phone call is all it takes just to be here, get the help.
Wonderful information. So we are going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be back with my co-host, Berenice Flint, and Dr. Rovada. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It. If you have questions about services Imperial County Behavioral Health may offer that deal with today's show topic, please feel free to call 760-482-4000. Let's Talk About It is presented weekly on KXO AM 1230, FM 107.5, and KXOradio.com as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
Welcome back, Imperial Valley. We are on our third and final segment, our show today, which is men's mental health, and June is Men's Mental Health Month. My co-host and I, Berenice Flint, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Rovada, who is a clinical psychologist in our mental health triage unit. And if you've missed the first two segments, we've gone over lots of different ideas, so we hope that you'll go to the KXO website and hear our podcast in its entirety. But we want to get right back into the show, and we want to talk about, for lack of better term, some warning signs or some things that maybe you're seeing in your father, your brother, your uncle, your grandfather, things like that, things that you're seeing. And, you know, it could be in women too, but right now we're focusing on men's mental health. Some things that you're seeing that, you know, maybe he needs more than just, you know, giving him some space and stuff like that. What are some of the things that us as lay people, or as, you know, our listening audience here, when they start to see these things, should start to say, maybe we need to get some help?
Well, thank you again for that question. So I will respond to this by just giving a short story, because it's easier then to relate to where you are within that story. Long time ago, I was in my early stages of this journey in mental health, I was quite intrigued to see how do ordinary people become suicidal? What is really happening? I mean, you see a father figure or your uncle, some people that you respect and think they're perfectly normal. And then what are the signs I should watch along their life journey? When did they start progressing or changing into the state of distress? So what I learned from looking at such cases, hundreds of such cases and all, is some basic signs that I can pass on to you, which is, number one is, if you find a person constantly struggling with a problem, a life problem, it could be a coexistence with other people, could be coexistence with themselves, they do not like the way they are, or something about them they do not like, or they're struggling something on social-related problems, like financial-related problems or something, or they feel like they're not feeling any emotions at all. They don't find life to be gratifying, and they're showing a degree of detachment towards life, or they're experiencing some sort of a moral dilemma to say, hey, this is what I should do, but in my workplace or in my home or something, I'm asked to or have to do differently. I cannot coexist with myself. This is not me. So these are all creative challenges everybody faces sooner or later, in at least if not daily, at least weekly and monthly these days. But the important question is, ask the not what challenge you're facing. That's always important. But start seeing how often are you experiencing this problem? Are you able to find a path forward? If you find somebody who are unable to find an acceptable path forward for them, right? That's usually a telltale sign that, that's like a level one sign that this can become a problem along the way, right? It's not a mental health problem yet, but that is the head of the foundational thing. Second thing is that you would start seeing them maladaptations that we discussed earlier in the call, right? So on the recording, which is they resort to drinking, overworking, all this, a little bit of a deviant behaviors that you would start seeing. Pay attention to say, is there any deviation in their way of life that they're going through? And if you observe any deviations, you start understanding, hey, is it driven by a purpose or are you just trying to overcome? Let's say I went and bought a $100,000 car. And if you just say whoa, it's all great, man, but why are you buying that car? And if I just say I've been saving money for all this time, I wanted this, my dream car, and et cetera, et cetera. If my story adds up, and then, yeah, fine, And if I see that I've been financially responsible, makes sense. But on the other hand, if it's like I'm doing it just because I don't feel good about it and the way things are, and I just want to have this so that maybe I can go for some tries and feel. If you see the second type, that's also a telltale sign. And I'm giving these examples because, as I highlighted earlier, most of the mental health problems start in a very faint, commonsensical manner. It doesn't start in a very, very big way. There are cases it would start like that, but most of the everyday situations, it starts like this. So these are the things to see, hey, are there any deviant behaviors, abnormal, not if not abnormal, but unusual behaviors? Why am I seeing this? And the third thing scientists watch for is an early onset of physical health problems. This is important because somebody would say, oh, my dad or granddad and others, they got diabetes when they're 60 years old. I'm 25 and I'm getting this already. My doctor says I'm likely. Or I'm getting 60, I'm only 30 years old. I'm getting diabetes already or cholesterol already, et cetera, et cetera. Right? A lot of chronic health problems. And of course, you would go to the doctor and the doctor will help us giving medications. But the important point to ask is that, hey, why is that I'm experiencing this? The answer 90% of the time is lifestyle, right? But if you probe further, a lot of it is a stress response that your body is going through because what you're keeping it through. And this happens when the first problem of problems you're not resolving in a healthy manner or the other problems that I mentioned, so other signs. So if you don't address those things, if you're maladapting and all, eventually the body is going to start reacting because it is only designed to perform in certain levels. So these are the kind of things, if you're having early onset of health problems, if you're seeing any deviant behavioral problems, or if you're struggling with a problem for a life journey problem for a long time, but you're not seeing any resolution, you see themselves talking about it, thinking about it, or the opposite, they completely become recluse and they don't want to talk. These are all usually telltale signs that, something is not right. It doesn't mean it's a mental health problem. It could be just a mental health, the fitness part that we discussed. They don't know how to address it. So not everything is a big disease or a problem or anything. So you don't need to go to that extent, but have a conversation, figure out. Those are the basics to start.
Well, those are really great things for us to keep in mind, because, I always say you may not need it today, but file it in the back of your head because you never know when you might need it. And, a mental health challenge can sometimes come on very quickly, or we may come upon somebody that we haven't seen in a bit, and we need to use these tools, these tips, these tricks that we keep in our toolbox or in our files, in our brains, to help people get the assistance that they need so that they can get it in a timely fashion. And we appreciate that.
Yeah. And it sounds a lot like the importance of being present and observant, right, of those around us to be able to catch on to those little changes, those signs that are there. It's just being very, very present with them. Dr. Rivada, is there anything else that maybe we have not touched on so far that you would like to share, you would like for our audience to know?
Yeah, thank you. So there's definitely one thing that we want to highlight, which is many times people listen to these kind of thoughts and they would just say, a lot of mental health is just talk therapy. Like, you know, it's all about talking about things, et cetera. But I just want to let people know, at least for awareness point of view, clinical mental health is far, 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 superly far different. This is like a professional medicine versus what we're talking about is basic mental fitness, right? Mental health as a fitness. So all these are good, healthy habits for life, right? Now, the way to just think about these things, I want to give a simple example so that might resonate with people. Imagine I like swimming, and here I am swimming in the edges of the Pacific Ocean here in San Diego, having a great time in the beach and all that, you know, that's all fine. Now, let's say a bad wave hit me, and it took me down a little bit lower, but that's like everyday life problems we discussed, right? That's like, you know, I lose my footing or I lose my grip, something. But instead of me panicking and start worrying that I'm about to drown, I mentally condition myself. And as any good swimmer, you try to swim back to the normal. So that is what we're talking about, basic mental health as a fitness. We all get pushed down once in a while. We're just developing the tricks of the trade to say, hey, how do other people cope and manage so that I am not giving into the problems? That's what we're discussing. But clinical mental health goes much deeper. So let's say I gave into my emotion, I started panicking, and I started drowning more and more, deeper and deeper. So even if I have at some levels of the depth, unless I'm like a Navy SEAL diver or somebody who's really prepared for that depths, I cannot really overcome the water pressures to come out. So I may be mentally strong, I may be very determined, I may be trying to live life by myself, I'm trying to be paddle myself, but I cannot come back up. That is a point where you need professional help. So many times people recognize that, you know, their problem is they don't recognize the depth of their problem that they're experiencing, because mental health is invisible, right? If I just say all I have is a bruise on my hand versus if I lost my arm or a limb, you can easily tell the distinction, but you cannot tell the distinction on the degree of mental handicap somebody's experiencing. So just because they see them physically, they just say, oh, you're just swimming on the shore, but they don't recognize that that other person is way deep in the water. So just by talking to them, suggesting, you may think your job is done, but they're still stuck with the problem and a lot more disaster. So recognize the depth. And then what is further important to recognize is that sometimes even then people don't respond to the depth. They'll somehow manage. They keep pushing through life. They go further lower, where really, really a point comes where they cannot live with themselves, because at some point there is a self in us, a conscious self in us that can always distance ourselves from every life that we are having. And you just say, I don't like the person I have become. And these are the moments where people have done very disastrous things, such as including, I don't want to use the word, but that's the only word out there called suicide, right? They would do that. A normal person could end up committing a suicide just because they don't like the circumstances they ended up with. But these things are easily preventable. And I say this last part is that when you go see a psychiatrist or a psychologist or talk to our case managers or our program teams, there's a wide variety of professionals and behavioral health that come together to help. Almost like the feeling of a NASCAR pit. People come and quickly try to get you up and running. A lot of different people play various important roles to help you. And what people recognize is that, oh, I don't want medication, or I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this. They don't recognize the depth they're in. And they try to still somehow get out with it just because they don't fully recognize or see or feel the mental handicap. So all I tell people is that, you know, please recognize that all that we are discussing in this show is the surface level part of, like, you know, being pulled down by life, and rather than giving into the problem, you figuring out and building the capacity to go about life. That is fitness. That is mental health. But mental illness and mental disorders, that is the clinical side of it. But if you don't take care of the first one, it gets worse and worse, and you end up in the second lane. But if you are getting into that depth level, please take help before it becomes worse and worse, because somebody tells like, okay, you give me a pill, I'll be ready tomorrow. Will it go away tomorrow? So like, no, it took all this time for your mind to deteriorate. It's going to take a good amount of time to recover too. So there's nothing like a magic pill to change your thoughts. So it's not like I can take a pill and suddenly I start feeling all good and great and everything. So it's a journey. So keep those factors in mind. So sooner the better, because why pay all the price and screw your life and have a bad time and all that, when health is just around you all the time.
That is very true. And behavioral health is here. We have lines that are open 24/7, which is 1-800-817-5292. And our 8-to-5 line is 442-265-1525. We do have Casa Serena, which is available up till 10 p.m. They're open at 7 a.m. So if someone is experiencing a mental health crisis, they can walk in. Or like Dr. Rivada had mentioned earlier, our mental health triage unit is also available. You can call that 1-800-817-5292 to start the services or to start the process to have someone contact you or go to your location to start the process. But Anissa and I would like to thank you, Dr. Rivada, for taking time out of your day today to be here with us and enlighten us and talk about men's mental health. The conversation was so wonderful and so enlightening. We really appreciate you and you taking the time to be with us. Our last thought is something that we want to leave you with, and it's taking care of your mental health is just as important as taking care of your physical health. Asking for help is a sign of strength, not weakness. Whether it's talking to a trusted friend, family member, or professional, support is available, and no one has to face life's challenges alone. We thank you for being with us, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Sunday morning at 7 a.m. on KXO AM 1230 and each Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on FM 107.5. This weekly broadcast is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO Radio. This program features weekly community mental health issues on your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Service, Leticia Plancarte-Garcia, Director. Our co-hosts for today's program were Patricia Arevalo-Caro and Alfonso Ruiz. Thank you for listening.